Good morning, everyone. I'm going to be talking to you today about emergency responder health monitoring and surveillance and step capability 14. I've spoken about this a number of times, but there could be some new people, so I'm just going to briefly go through the general framework of ERMS and then get into the updates. So, the goal of ERMS is to develop a health monitoring and surveillance framework for the prevention of injury and illness for emergency responders before, during, and after deployment. So this is what it looks like pictorially. So we start in the lower left, pre-deployment phase, deployment phase, post-deployment phase, then we have the post-event tracking decision in the middle because we kind of use all three phases of information to make that decision. And then we have sort of the continuous arrows because we hope that whatever we learn from the previous deployment will feed into the next one. The origins of this are really after 9/11. So we saw, you know, fairly far into the incident that it looked like responders were going to develop long-term health effects, and it was difficult to go back and collect all the information that we needed to be able to fully assess that. And so there were a lot of recommendations at that time about doing things differently in the future and collecting information prospectively so that we had it if we needed it, as well as to be able to provide some immediate prevention measures. And so Dr. Howard, who's the director of NIOSH, asked me to develop this program. So we worked with a pretty diverse work group. We tried to make sure that federal, state, local governments, as well as labor unions and volunteer organizations were included. And we worked through the National Response Team Worker Safety and Health Annex Subcommittee to get this document published in 2002. And so it's available at these websites. So this is the main document, the technical assistance document, and now we've developed a number of complementary materials to help with this information. We have a second one called a Guide for Key Decision Makers. The National Response Team asked us to develop this more for like incident commanders or heads of agencies and things like that to understand why this is important without necessarily going into all the details of exactly how to do it. So now we'll go through some of the key components. So in the pre-deployment phase, one of the key ones is medical screening. So we look at fitness for deployment, not fitness for duty, just to make sure that we keep those separate. And oftentimes, at the end of this medical screening, they'll be assigned to some sort of deployment category. So, and different agencies can do whatever makes the most sense. I've seen anything from just three categories, can deploy anywhere to do anything, can not deploy to austere conditions, cannot deploy at all. So something like that, whereas the Army Corps of Engineers has like six or seven categories, and it's all the way from can deploy anywhere in the world to do anything down to can only deploy within the U.S. to do a desk job, so, and then various things in between. So can do whatever makes sense. Training, we talk about training in two different areas, one in pre-deployment where you're looking at health and safety topics. It was really hard to list out the actual, all the potential trainings available because there's a lot. So we focus more on the topics of things that you might want to think about and gave some, you know, some listing of organizations that usually provide this sort of training. And then we also talk about, again, during deployment, because, you know, once the disaster actually happens, then you might need to specifically train them to that work site or about the specific hazards that they're going to see. And that's often called site-specific training or just-in-time training or toolbox talks, whatever you want to call it. Then the next one is centralized tracking and rostering of responders. So again, we talk about this in two places. One in pre-deployment, where you're rostering everyone who could potentially deploy from your organization. And then we talk about it again during deployment, where you're doing the on-site rostering and you're specifically rostering. These are the people who are actually here at this disaster. The next is surveillance and monitoring, and this is kind of the crux of the document. And so we're looking at a couple things, both exposures and health effects, and also environmental monitoring and assessment. So, and we feel like it's really important to sort of analyze all this data together to try to make sense of what exposures and health effects are seeing, see if there's anything we can do to intervene and make the situation safer while people are yet responding. Then kind of on the end of during deployment or the beginning of post-deployment, we have out-processing assessments. And so this is a place where you can collect information that you might not have gotten earlier in the process. And also an opportunity, we encourage this to be in-person exit interviews, actually, and it's an opportunity to assess the person's health at that point, including their mental health, and making immediate medical referrals if necessary. And that raises a point that I should mention, that any time we talk about health in this document, we actually talk about physical health and mental health together. And so that's one thing we felt like was really important. And in the past, those two have been considered really separately, and we sort of feel like anytime you're thinking about one, you should be thinking about another. And we're really seeing that, you know, long-term health effects after disasters can almost always include mental health effects and, you know, might not always include physical effects. So we're trying to keep track of that. And then long-term surveillance and monitoring. So this is where you're looking for delayed or long-term adverse effects. And so we don't necessarily think that every responder needs to be long-term monitored for everything. But we just want to make sure that the data is analyzed and the determination is made, we feel like is the important part. Because you know, it is hard to keep track of people after they've left, and that's kind of part of the whole, this whole process, is that you don't lose touch with people. But you may end up deciding that it's only a subset of people, maybe only the people who are exposed to asbestos or something, or only the people who are exposed to lead, and, you know, and so you can use some of that information you got about exposures to help you make that decision. So I wanted to tell you about some of our past activities and how ARMS has been used so far. So we used it quite extensively in the Deepwater Horizon response. I led the rostering activity where we rostered 55,000 of the Deepwater Horizon responders. And even though actually this document was still in draft at that time, we had already had all these conversations about how important all this was, and so we really felt like we should try to implement it anyway. And so we actually were able to include a lot of the Deepwater Horizon surveys and tools and things that we used in the document, which was really great. And then the federal bioterrorism exercise called BOAT. This was a smaller exercise, but it was nice that we were really able to use ERMS from beginning to end, which was really nice with about 150 responders. And so that was a great experience. And I guess I don't have a slide about it, but we've used it quite a bit for Ebola now. And I think I must have something about Ebola in here. Oh, we'll keep going. We'll be surprised to all of us. anyway, if it doesn't, then I'll just talk about it at the end. The other thing I wanted to bring up is step capability 14. So, you know, OPHPR put this out in 2011, and the ERMS document was still in draft, so they used a lot of the language and tools from it, but they don't refer to it directly because it wasn't yet published at that time, but you'll see a lot of similarities if you look at the two. And I actually do have an actual crosswalk between the two. If you're interested, let me know. I can send that to you. And so, anyway, this has kind of been really a good driver for many state and local health departments to develop this capability, and I think ERMS can be a really useful tool in helping people meet Capability 14. So here is just a little bit more detail about Capability 14. It has these four functions, and you can see it talks a lot about some of the similar things that we've already touched on today. Oh, see, look, there you go. Ebola response. So I wanted to talk about this. So we have, CDC has more fully implemented ERMs in this Ebola response than we ever have before. And so I think it's really kind of exciting. And so I wanted to go through each of these things and tell you. So actually, this is our system before Ebola. So this is, it's called Responder Readiness Program. And these are kind of the things that we were already doing, which already meet a lot of the ERMS requirements, but some other things are missing. And so let me go through some of the things that we've added. It's kind of exciting. So early on in the Ebola response, we sent out folks to Africa and they came back and they're like, oh my gosh, it's really bad over there. And so we created some work groups of like, okay, how could we make this safer for our responders? What can we do? And so we made a bunch of recommendations, and that led to creating this unit called the Deployment Risk Mitigation Unit, which don't ask me where the name came from. But I think of it as very similar to the ERMS unit that we describe in the ERMS document. So we actually propose that an ERMS unit be under the safety officer in the incident command structure and, you know, be able to provide the safety officer and therefore the incident commander the information that they need, and might be made up of industrial hygienists, epidemiologists, medical officers, you know, that can actually provide a lot of the information I just described to you. So anyway, within the Deployment Risk Mitigation Unit, we had a pre, during, and post-deployment coordinator, which was really great. I was the first post-deployment coordinator and helped stand up this unit. We also had a fairly large group about health communications, and especially addressing the stigma issues I think you heard about, you know, daycare centers not wanting our CDC staff to send their kids to school and until their 21 days have passed, and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So we had a fairly robust group working on that. And then the other big activity was creating safety officer positions in each of the three countries and then supporting them through this unit. So now I'm going to go through each of the phases. So in pre-deployment, we added mental health screening. We've never had that before, so that was really a big accomplishment, I felt like. We had a pretty good, robust pre-deployment briefing about health and safety. It was about 4 hours, and went through a lot of the things we were finding out from the debriefs, as well as teaching people how to don and doff PPE. Even though our people weren't doing healthcare, we wanted them to go with PPE. And then I felt like we had an improved staffing process. Like, I felt like because of the seriousness of the situation, people really tried to make sure that they use people's CVs and their desired deployment roles to really match them up with whatever would be the best fit for them, for their role to deploy in. And I think that was really great. So then in-country safety officers, and I did actually go as a safety officer to Sierra Leone in March and April. And so that was a really great experience. But so these were some of the topics that we focused on while we were over there. Personal safety and security, we worked pretty closely with the regional security officer at the embassy in each country. Ebola risk assessment, so, you know, anytime there were any concerns about someone being sick or that someone had been exposed, you know, we helped work through that in a coordinated medevac with the DRMU if necessary. Food and water safety, this was a really big focus. We had a lot of people with a lot of diarrhea, basically. And so, but with healthcare being really limited, that was actually really very serious. So we actually had someone with Campylobacter who had to go to Ebola treatment unit because there was no place else for her to go. So, I mean, that was really kind of a scary situation. And then vector and rodent control. So this is a very high malaria countries. And there were, you know, rodents in hotel rooms at times, so we worked on that. We also did lodging assessments where we actually went to all the hotels where our CDC staff were staying, and we didn't do full restaurant inspections, but we did kind of, we had a checklist that we went through and kind of looked at the security and, you know, the conditions of the different hotels and including their restaurants. And then we kind of prioritized when you're in this district, this is your first choice, this is your second choice, this is your third choice hotel, you know, just so people could have some information about those things before they got there. And then resiliency. We did not actually have mental health providers deployed with us, which would have been nice, but We do have a training program that one of our mental health providers provides called disaster. It was it disaster safety and resiliency team, or I can't remember what the S stands for. Something like that, support and resiliency team, or something like that, DSRT. And so all of us had that, and so at least we had some basics about psychological first aid and some things like that, and we're able to provide that. So that was good. Post-deployment, this was a really important area, was the debriefs, and part of it was the geographical separation. It was hard to be in, you know, the time zone difference and everything. It was hard to be in, you know, phone communication with people all the time. So we really try to get as much information as we could from people who are coming back. And so we actually had the resiliency and employee assistance program folks, the after action folks, and the security folks all together providing one debrief. So that was nice. So they didn't have to do too many debriefs. And then they also often had a separate team specific debrief. And then active monitoring, which I think you all know a lot about. So in summary, I feel like we were able to more fully implement ERMs than we had in the past, and I'm working now to indoctrinate that and make sure that that continues in the future. And I think this DRMU could be a model, you know, that other agencies might be interested in. And just to reiterate the importance of safety officers and the post-deployment debriefs. So now I'm going to go back to tell you a little bit more about what we're doing with ERMs. So we've been doing classroom trainings for a while with the CASPER and ACE folks. And so we've got one more year left of that. We have online trainings available. So please feel free to take advantage of that if you're interested. We have a 3-hour course on the CDC Train website and a 1-hour course on the FEMA website. We do have continuing education credits for both. And then software development. We've been working on this. We'll be pilot testing it this summer with a couple of organizations, and then we hope to have it be publicly available this fall. And so this is not, you know, not meant to be an eye chart. Just so you can see, we actually, you know, looked at the functional decomposition of the ERMs activities and try to prioritize which ones we would include in the software. And so we have certain functions we're including the prototype and then the version that we hope to ultimately have available for you all. And it is based on EPI info. And so if you're familiar with that, you'll be able to use this. And we also continue to provide technical assistance. And, you know, as people need specific communication materials for different things, we're happy to do that. And so there are opportunities to collaborate with us. Please, I would love your assistance in advertising some of these things that I've talked about, as well as incorporating, you know, ERMs into your emergency preparedness materials. And we probably don't have time for that. And we have this disaster EPI community practice. I don't know how many of you are already on there, but there's a lot of all these training materials, and I have some of the Word versions of the tools and things like that are all available on that website. So definitely feel free to take advantage of that. I think that's it. People are still taking pictures of it. Okay. Thank you.
So we have time for some questions. Martha.
Renee, do you want to say a little bit more about the CDC work group for capability 14?
Oh, sure.
And also,
yes, I meant to, and I'm sorry, I forgot.
But, and related to that, you know, capability 14 is really referring to responder safety and health for the public health workforce, not for the
Okay, yes, thank you. Yeah. So yeah, capability 14, do I need to use the microphone? I'm sorry. I was walking towards you. Okay. Capability 14 does focus on the public health responder workforce, and ERMs kind of looks at responders more generally. We actually think of anyone who could potentially be on a disaster response. So it could be responders or volunteers or contractors, you know, anyone. So yeah, the capability 14 is a little bit more limited. And then yes, we do have a work group with career epidemiology field officers, so CDC assignees in SAFE. And we've been working on some materials that are getting close to being ready that could be helpful to you. So we have a state, a responder safety and health template plan
And we have, that's where that crosswalk came from, actually. And I'm working on an Ebola one-pager for people who got Ebola supplement funding and wanted to focus on Capability 14. I had about six states that contacted me that they were planning to do that. So I'm trying to get something out that will be helpful to folks on that as well. So thanks, Martha.